At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
If I could do your update sound, I would do it right now.
Yes, we have an update. It's coming in now. Please take it away, our in-the-field reporter, Mike Meadows.
Sound like the Twilight Zone a little bit.
It is the Twilight Zone around here.
Anyway, I have an update about the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals. The story that...
That won't stop.
It just keeps giving. We've been following it pretty closely, and I think some of our listeners have, too, because it's kind of a crazy story.
It is a crazy story.
Well, the first justice who brought all this to the attention was Justice Laufrey. He was the one that had the most...
The sexual couch.
Yes, the sexual couch, the most ostentatious office. And... basically, what had happened is they impeached all the different justices, the legislature did, and one justice was actually, they had a trial in the Senate, but before they could conduct the other impeachment trials in the Senate, one of the justices, who was impeached by the House, filed a lawsuit with the newly appointed Supreme Court, and basically won her lawsuit with the newly appointed Supreme Court, saying that the legislature of the House did not draft the articles of impeachment properly. So they basically threw out all the impeachments.
Well, and they basically said that you don't have the right to judge us. I mean, is what it came down to. You don't have the right as a legislative branch to do away with our branch, the judicial branch.
Well, that's not exactly what they said.
Well, that's what it sounded like. They said you don't have the authority over us to do that, and they kind of backed off. Most of the ones in the House didn't really know where to go with that.
Well, because procedurally they didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Oh, it all comes down to the procedures.
Yeah, you gotta follow the rules. It wasn't so much like complete thumbing your nose like maybe you thought it was.
Well, that's the way it read to me in the paper.
I'm sure it did. But
What are you saying? Are you implying something about me?
So Jim Justice instructed a special session. Jim Justice is the governor, and he said he wanted to have a special session to invoke new articles of impeachment against the justices, and he wanted the House to meet on November 13th, which would have been yesterday as we're recording this. But Justice Laufrey actually resigned and tendered his letter of resignation to Justice on November 10th, after Justice had called for the new special session. So the interesting thing is that basically he resigned before he could be impeached again.
Because he was already impeached, but they had not held the trial.
Well, no, the other impeachment was thrown out.
Oh, it was thrown out.
So basically
they hadn't held the trial, but he was impeached.
But it was thrown out, so they had to impeach him again.
Well, how could they throw out an impeachment if he was never impeached?
They threw out the articles of impeachment that the House had enacted previously.
Oh, not the actual impeachment itself.
Well, let's go back.
Because you can be impeached without being removed,
let's go back
just like Clinton was.
Let's go back through a little primer here, what took place. So the House, they draft up articles of impeachment, and then they vote. And then if the vote is successful, then they send it over to the Senate for the trial. So all of the different justices were impeached in the House. Only one justice had a trial in the Senate. Before the other justices had their trials in the Senate, the new Supreme Court threw out those other impeachments.
Okay. But they were impeached.
They were impeached.
That's what I was saying. They were impeached. They threw it out.
It's not what you said, and I have the tape to prove it. So
I have the tape. It's on my computer.
So basically what Justice said is he wanted them to meet again to draw up new articles of impeachment that could proceed to trial in the Senate. But before that took place, Loffrey went ahead and resigned. So you can't impeach somebody who has already resigned.
Yeah, that would be redundant.
Yeah. So.
So, but so now we've got an appoint a temporary one in his place, and they won't hold a special election to replace him until 2020.
That's right, because they missed the deadline for last last thing. So
yeah, we elected two new ones in this last go round.
Yep.
To fill in for two that had already one retired and one resigned. Now we've got two that are still left that actually have survived. One, they did not. The Senate didn't convict her, right?
Right.
And then the other one has never, they threw out her articles of impeachment, and they have never put them back in place.
Nope, just kind of hanging out.
Yep.
So
we got two new ones, and we'll have a temporary one.
Now, Loffrey did get convicted in federal court, and he might go to prison, so that's not good for him.
No, it's probably not good.
He did not have the last laugh by avoiding impeachment, because
no,
he's getting his in the end.
But one of the things that they do get, though, is they can still run for public office if they resign as opposed to being impeached. They can still run for office later, and it probably keeps their pension in place. If they get impeached, they might lose certain benefits, whereas if they resign, then you don't lose your benefits.
Maybe. I don't know about that, so.
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
That sounds reasonable.
And I don't think anybody else cares enough they're going to look it up, so I'll just say it's a fact.
Sure, there you go. Stand by your man.
If you are definite enough about your lie, people will believe your lie.
Sometimes. So anyway, that was our update. It's not what this whole episode is going to be about, though.
No, we're not about the sexual couch Supreme Court justice.
We thought we would do this episode, or do you have another update?
Well, I have something I read in the paper today that reminded me of you, so I thought that I would just share it. It said that there was an elderly patient that needed a heart transplant, and so the doctor came in and discussed his options, and he said, we have three possible donors. The first donor is a young, healthy athlete who died in an automobile accident. The second donor is a middle-aged businessman who never drank or smoked and who died flying his private jet. And the third donor is an attorney who died after practicing law for 30 years. Which do you want? And the elderly patient said, well, I will take the one from the lawyer. So after the successful transplant, the doctor asked him, he said, well, why did you choose that one? He said, I wanted one that had never been used.
There you go. This is your lawyer joke for the day.
I just, I read that and thought of you, so I just thought I'd share it.
You don't think I use my heart? It's no, silence.
No comment.
So this episode is going to be about the recent lawsuit, which CNN and the reporter Jim Acosta filed against Donald Trump. So this is actually mentioned on our court appointed page, and there was on Facebook, and there was, I guess, a little bit of a discussion on it back and forth.
Some good sightings that were done on it. It's not like this is the only time this has ever happened.
But anyway, we thought it'd be kind of an interesting topic to talk about today.
Timely. It's timely.
Very timely. So if you haven't been paying attention to the news, basically what took place is that Jim Acosta is a reporter for CNN, and he had a White House credential to the press room, which was is kind of called informally a hard pass.
I'll take a hard pass on that.
Yeah, I'll take a hard pass. And basically what that means is that they can kind of come and go from the White House as they want, unescorted, to the White House and the different briefings and things like that.
And they can carry arms in and out and stuff like that.
I don't think so.
Oh.
But otherwise they would have to get clearance, and it takes 24 hours to get clearance and different things like that. So this hard pass is pretty crucial to reporting at the White House, because a lot of these briefings take place pretty quickly. There's not a lot of notice. So it's not like if you wanted to come for like the Easter egg thing they always do in the lawn, you know, you have plenty of notice for that. You could put in plenty of time for it if you're doing that kind of in-depth coverage on the Easter egg hunt at the White House.
And I don't know what it is, but these briefings, unrehearsed briefings, seem to be popping up more frequently than they ever have in the past, unless they just didn't carry I don't know what you call it,
the opposite of gravitas?
Yeah, that all the other ones used to. I don't know, because they're always stirring up something.
So basically what happened is that Jim Acosta, he was asking Trump some Sarah Sanders some questions. She's the press secretary, and I think it was No, actually, it was Trump, wasn't it?
No, it was Trump. Yeah, he was up there at the podium.
That's right.
And he was asking him the
questions. And he was asking him some questions, and Trump didn't really like what the questions he was asking, and one of the interns reached to try to take the microphone away from him, and there's this whole dispute about whether or not he pushed the intern, and then the Sarah Sanders is the press secretary. Supposedly, she released a video that was altered that showed that where he did push her, and then, you know, whether or not he pushed her or not, who knows? But anyway, this big kerfuffle. Is that a word? Kerfuffle?
It could be.
There's this big
if you want it to be.
There's this big kerfuffle
we'll start it.
In the press room. And they revoked his hard pass, so he can no longer come and play with the other reporters there.
He was rude.
Yeah.
That's what Trump said. He's rude. He's a very rude man. We don't want rude people. They need to be soft, gentle souls like Trump.
He's a very rude man. I know it because I am one myself.
Takes one to know one. Is that what he said? Takes one to know one.
But anyway, his credentials were revoked.
Well, I don't think we should gloss over this doctored tape too much.
Well, yeah.
That in and of itself, I mean, why do that? Why do you need to doctor the tape to try to make your point on something that everybody in the world saw and there were plenty of other tapes of to see it?
I don't know.
I mean, that's just unbelievable. And I really was disappointed. Saturday Night Live kind of covered it, but not to the extent they should have. They should have had that in there, although their Jeff Sessions opening was pretty good, but they still should have had that in there better, where like it's a picture of suddenly in black and white, you see the woman go flipping across the room and into, I don't know, a pond or something like that. I mean, they should have really done it up big, that this was the film that was offered up later by the White House.
Yeah. I don't know why they did it. And I mean, honestly, that wasn't really something I was kind of looking into as far as researching it, because I was focused more on actual like legal stuff. But
oh, well, I was interested in the entertainment portion of it, how entertaining it was that they felt the need to doctor it up and put it out. And, it really was not an egregious thing. Yes, he did kind of pull away from her or push her arm away because he didn't want to give up his mic.
Yeah.
He didn't want to take turns. He never was taught that in kindergarten or something.
He wasn't done yet. So what CNN and Jim Acosta did is they actually filed a lawsuit in federal court, and a copy of it here. The Cable News Network, Inc. and Abilio James Acosta, his first name's Abilio, they are the plaintiffs, and they are suing in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, and they are suing Donald J. Trump in his official capacity of president, John F. Kelly in his official capacity of chief of staff, William Shine in his official capacity of deputy chief of staff, Sarah Huckabee Sanders in her official capacity of press secretary, and the United States Secret Service, Randolph D. Ailes or Allies, in his official capacity as director of the United States Secret Service, and John Doe, Secret Service agent, in his official capacity, address unknown.
John Doe?
Yeah.
So that's the guy that actually signs the credentials, but they keep him a secret so nobody knows who he is.
I guess. I don't know. We can go here to the jurisdictional thing, and basically
that's a lot of people they grouped in there.
Yeah. Well, it says defendant John Doe is a Secret Service member who personally took away Acosta's White House press credentials known as a hard pass, similar to that carried by White House employees on November 7th, 2018. He is sued in his official capacity. So basically somebody actually came and said, give that to me. Give me your badge.
No, I don't want to. Yeah. Give it to me. You're going to have to make me. I'll make you.
Do you really want me to make you?
This all sounds like something that could have taken place on a playground or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Here's the odd thing about this lawsuit, and I'm going to get into the actual complaint itself a bit more. Fox News is actually supporting this lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
They state in a press release that they intend to file an amicus brief.
Right.
So an amicus is Latin, which that comes from a Latin word directly, which means friend. And an amicus brief is basically a friend of the court brief.
They're saying we agree with them.
Yeah. And basically, when you don't have a dog in the fight, but you feel like you want to file something kind of pertinent and give your input to the court, you file an amicus brief. I also saw BuzzFeed News tweeted they are filing one, too. So I don't know if I didn't realize BuzzFeed News would be filing an amicus brief, but evidently they are.
I think a couple of other news stations backed them up, too.
Well,
news networks.
Oh, yeah. There's 12 other news organizations as of right now. AP, Bloomberg, First Look Media, Gannett, National Press Club, NBC News, New York Times, Politico, Press Freedom Defense Fund, EW Scripps, USA Today Network, and Washington Post. But to me, the one that really stands out is Fox, because, Fox is
right,
fair and
Right.
Unbalanced or balanced or whatever. You know, in this day and age, you know, where you get your news source is almost where you want to get your news source from, depending on what your political alliance is.
Was Mad Magazine not in there, too?
Did they not join it? They said, what me worry?
What was Alfred E. Newman thinking?
I don't know. But they Fox News basically said, Fox News supports CNN in its legal effort to regain its White House reporter's press credential. We intend to file an amicus brief with the U.S. District Court. Secret Service passes for working White House journalists should never be weaponized. While we don't condone the growing antagonistic tone by both the president and the press at recent media avails, we do support a free press, access, and open exchanges for the American people. That's a pretty pretty good statement, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's very kind of adultish, if you ask me. Well, they're basically not saying like what that guy did was right or anything like that. They don't like that, but they don't think that this is the proper way to go about it.
Well, I would just say that there are a lot of things that have been unusually gone about over the last couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do tell.
I'm just saying that the Mr. Trump seems to have his own ways of doing business, so this isn't the first time that something like this has come up.
Yeah, almost like a my way or the highway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like you always heard that I'm not a politician, I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
So I'm going to run the government like a business. Well, here's the difference between the government and business. In government, there's certain procedures that are outlined in the Constitution and other states of law that you have to follow. And when you run your own business, short of, you know, violating, you know, like EEOC and things like that, you can do pretty much anything you want to do.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can fire people for just about any reason you want.
Yeah, you can banish people from your building. Or whatever, for whatever reason you want to.
Banish.
Yeah. You can banish them. That's right. You can do whatever you want
to
do.
Banish them to the nether regions.
Yeah. You can cut their pay. You can do a lot of things to people that you want to do when you own your own business.
Yeah.
But you can't do that when you're the president of the United States.
Yeah. And also when you're talking about the what they call the Fourth Estate, the press, I mean, people are kind of sensitive about that, too, because... Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that kind of keeps the government in check a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I mean, you know, you would compare it to how the media is controlled in Russia or something like that.
Yeah.
You would never want to get to that type of situation where the government decides what can be printed or broadcast and what can't be. And, you know, where do you start down that path?
I agree. So I want to get into a bit more of the legal arguments that CNN is asserting in their complaint that they filed, and a bit more procedurally where we are and what's going to happen with it. But before that, I think we have a couple pending motions before the court today.
Well, we have one pending motion.
Oh, one?
One.
All right.
But it's a good one.
It is.
It is.
Who's on the docket?
Well, if I might approach the bench to pay court costs, on the docket today are our friends from Robinhood.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free.
They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy.
They provide a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence.
And they have simple and intuitive, clear design with data presented in an easy-to-digest way.
Now here's why Robinhood is valuable. There are no commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every time you trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees for trade stocks, and you keep all of your profits.
And I was reading an article about Robinhood here recently, and they were talking about how they have really, you know, they call it disrupted the market, but yeah, in a good way, because all the other ones out there that were doing these type things before, they all charge commissions on this. It's unheard of that you would do it for free.
Yeah, and the thing is that Robinhood is very easy to understand and easy to use charts, and they have market data. You can place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone, so you can use your phone to do it.
Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, like the 100 most popular, or sectors like entertainment and social media, and curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every stock.
And the quickest way to learn is learn why you're doing it. You can discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds, custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest.
Because you don't want to miss the right moment.
You got to jump at it.
So, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio.
That's free.
Free. No cost. Big stock.
You can sign up at court.robinhood.com.
That's court.robinhood.com. And we say, have your first transaction on us with the stock that our podcast has brought to you.
So the lawsuit is it's an 18-page complaint. And just as a quick kind of primer on lawsuits and the way these things work, is that the complaint is the first thing that you file. And that basically has certain allegations in it, alleging some sort of wrongdoing or some sort of cause of action against somebody. So you file that and you get a summons issued for all the different defendants. And then you serve the defendants with a copy of the complaint. And then they have a certain amount of time to file some sort of answer or responsive pleading. So that's kind of procedurally where we are right now.
Well, they said, CNN said that they're filing this because in the president's own words, Acosta failed to treat the White House with respect at a White House briefing. This severe and unprecedented punishment is a culmination of years of hostility by President Trump against CNN and Acosta based on the contents of their reporting. An unabashed attempt to censor the press and exclude reporters from the White House who challenge and dispute the president's point of view.
The actual verbiage in the complaint itself, they start out with an introduction. They say who Jim Acosta is, and he's actually been, he's been a journalist for more than two decades. And for more than 5 years, he's been CNN's national political correspondent. And since January 2018, he's been the chief White House correspondent. He's covered the White House since 2012, and since 2013 has possessed press credentials, often called a hard pass, that allow him unescorted access to the White House. And then it goes on to say about how on November 7th, his White House credentials became revoked when he was alleged in the president's own words to treat the White House with respect at a press house briefing. So that was his big transgression or wrongdoing there.
Well, it's the same thing. He's not showing the proper amount of respect.
Yeah. Over to the CNN goes on to say that basically that CNN and Acosta have been favorite targets of abuse by the administration. The president's criticism has been directed at other news organizations too. It says the president explained to Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes, "You know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all so that when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you." So he said that in an interview to 60 Minutes.
Well, it's probably not very smart if you have ulterior motives to reveal what those ulterior motives are.
That's right. And this is part of the introduction. CNN talks about, it says, the framers of our Constitution embraced profound national commitment to the principle that debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, wide open, and that it may well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasant sharp attacks on the government and public officials. And that's quoting the famous New York Times v. Sullivan case from 1964, which talks about the First Amendment. They go in also to talk about another famous First Amendment case, the Hustler Magazine v. Falwell case. They talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, they say they talk about the protection afforded news gathering under the First Amendment guarantee of freedom of press that requires access not be denied arbitrarily or for less than compelling reasons. And this is a Sherrill v. Knight case from 1977 that's also cited in the complaint. So they're citing some different case law here. The Sherrill case is kind of interesting. It basically says that while the public doesn't have a right to the White House access, the First Amendment prohibits denial of the press pass arbitrarily or for less than compelling reasons. So they have to kind of explain why they're taking this guy's press pass, according to this case.
Right. Well, that was the impetus of that Sherrill v. Knight case, was that this person had gotten denied this, whatever Sherrill, whatever his first name was. Let's call him Bob. Yeah, it was Robert Sherrill.
Good old Bob Sherrill.
Yeah, that's what, you know, if you're looking for a press guy, just figure his first name's Bob, you know, Bob Woodward, whatever. But
I'm going to talk about Bob Woodward here in a minute.
Are you?
Yeah.
But anyway, he had not been allowed to have a pass, but they didn't really tell him why. And they filed a Freedom of Information Act to get the information. And, well, lo and behold, the White House does not have to comply with Freedom of Information Acts. That's considered classified information, and they don't have to comply with it. But it, the only thing that they could find was somewhere in his background, he had been arrested for a physical assault in Florida. Where else? Florida.
Right.
So that was the only thing they could find where they might have used that to keep him from getting his pass.
Bob was on spring break down there one year. Things got a little frisky.
Yeah. That was when Bob was in law school.
Well, he wasn't a lawyer. He was a press guy.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He was in press school.
Press school.
Yeah. Whatever you call that. So, it did end up that they overturned it and told him they had to give him a pass on that.
Yeah. Basically, the White House first said it removed his pass because it wouldn't tolerate a reporter placing his hands on a young woman. That was kind of the first story.
Unless it was Donald Trump, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was referring to the entertainment
video
that was there from the bus.
So then they kind of sort of changed their story and backpedaled a little bit and said basically the reporter physically refused to surrender a White House microphone to an intern. And that basically, they kind of changed their story a little bit after Sarah Sanders had tweeted out that doctored video you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
which again, I don't know why they did, and I didn't really get into it too much, but they managed to change their story a little bit.
You're just setting yourself up for problems when you start doctoring something that everybody already knows what happened.
Yeah, and so basically, you can make the argument that when they decided to change the reason why they revoked the press pass, it made their reasoning somewhat arbitrary, because it's like, well, we're looking for a reason to revoke it. So, and that's one of the things, one of the arguments that's going to be made is that they revoked it arbitrarily without any kind of real good reason to do it. The other argument they have, so that was kind of the First Amendment type argument. The second one is a Fifth Amendment violation. And CNN basically says that the White House's decision to revoke his press credentials violates the Fifth Amendment right to due process. CNN, in their complaint, says basically that Acosta received no direct notice from the White House that his credentials had been revoked, nor did he receive any notice about the incident beforehand or any chance to appeal the decision, which inhibits him from doing his job. They're again citing the Sherrill v. Knight case that you were talking about, where the guy filed the Freedom of Information Act and wasn't getting anything and didn't really get due process from it. And basically the argument is that although the government is allowed to act in the best interest of the security of the White House, they have to do it within reason. And they'll get some deference to it, but basically, there has to be some sort of process recognized to allow these journalists and why their press passes are being reviewed or revoked or whatever. So basically, if you're going to say it's security or something like that, then you have to tell them why, and you have to give them an opportunity to kind of like have a hearing about it or some sort of process with it. You can't just rip it away.
He was rude.
That's right.
That's what it was.
And then finally, the last argument that basically CNN says is that the final decision to yank the credentials by the Secret Service violates the Administrative Procedures Act, which governs how federal agencies issue regulations. And that basically by revoking it, the Secret Service were arbitrary and capricious, which violates that act. So basically they're saying that essentially the Secret Service didn't have the right to do what they did. And they talk about in the complaint, it says, generally, the Secret Service may grant or deny a request for security clearance made in connection with an application for a White House press pass. And that's under 31 CFR 409.1. However, the Secret Service discretion is expressly limited. Secret Service officials making that decision must be guided by solely the principle of whether the applicant presents a potential source of physical danger to the president and or the family of the president so serious as to justify his or her exclusion from White House press privileges. And that's codified in 31 CFR 409.1. So, I mean, do you think this Jim Acosta is actually presenting a tangible threat to the president or his family?
Well, I would say I would have to look at the rest of what the rules are that are involved in it and see, is there anything that has in there about certain types of etiquette or conduct unbecoming or something like that? Proper decorum and those type of things.
Right. But if that's the case,
can you drink while you're in there? Maybe he was drinking.
But if that's the case, don't you think you shouldn't be able to do that arbitrarily?
Well, it's not arbitrarily if the powers that be, the people that hold that power, decide this person is a problem, then that's your fault for making yourself a problem.
But you have no way of appealing that or anything like that. And then basically one person decides who is a problem. And that in itself becomes a problem, because when that person starts making things, decisions on their own, then you have real issues.
Well, here's what I think, and I watched the tape of this thing and how it came down. First of all, the guy was not just simply asking a question. He was baiting Trump, and he was being very forceful in his follow-up and telling him that you're not answering my question, and what about this? In other words, he wasn't asking the question for the sake of getting an answer. He was asking a question for the effect of what the question would do. He was trying to make Trump look bad.
Yeah.
And I'm not standing up for Trump. I'm just saying that was my interpretation of what I saw, that he was baiting him into that. And so the Trump indicated to the intern to take the microphone that he was done answering that question, and the guy wouldn't give up the microphone, and he kept on being more forceful with it. You know, you could make the jump and say, look, if the guy went to that extreme at that, if we let him back in, who knows how far he'll go next time.
That's true.
So, I mean, and is it reasonable? No, I don't know. But here's the thing. Violates your First Amendment right. They didn't ban CNN from the press room. They banned this particular guy. Now, CNN has 50 other people with a hard pass that can walk in there and cover the story.
You know, the thing is, too, he did ask the question. And the question was something along the lines about the caravan coming from Central America to the United States.
Right.
And the president really didn't respond to it.
Right.
All he said was, you know what? I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN. And if you did that well, your ratings would be much better.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's up there being basically a jackass.
Right. But the thing is, he doesn't have to answer any questions he doesn't want to.
He doesn't.
They can ask him a question and he can just say next.
Well, and then he says, you know what? He's trying to ask a follow-up question. And then basically that's when they come and want to take the microphone from him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he doesn't answer his question.
Right. But he doesn't have to answer the question.
He doesn't have to answer the question.
But he doesn't have to answer anybody's question.
He doesn't have to call on him, and he doesn't have to revoke the guy's press pass for asking a question.
Well, see, that's my only point, is he made a big deal out of this, and he didn't have to. All he had to do was don't ever call on this guy.
Yeah. Well, that's not how he operates.
Just don't ever recognize the person, and they, you know, and then what good will it do? And if he stands up and starts trying to shout out questions over top of other people, then maybe you got a better basis to say, look, this guy won't follow procedure.
Yeah, well.
But I'm just saying from what I saw, it the guy, and that's the problem with where we're at right now in our political arena, is nobody is genuine in what they're doing. Everybody has an agenda. The media, for first of all, is supposed to be unbiased. They're supposed to just report the story. They're not supposed to be the story. And I don't believe that's the way it is.
Here's the problem. Trump is making them the story because he's calling them fake news and saying all these things. And doing that.
They're playing right into his hands.
Well,
because you know what? He does this. He did all that. And everybody forgot about all the other stuff that's going on that's important while they all argued about should he have pulled this pass.
Well, and I was gonna save it for a little bit later. Might as well go into it now. But I said I was going to talk about Bob Woodward. Bob Woodward was very critical of CNN for filing this lawsuit. He says basically...
And he just wrote a book detrimental to Trump.
He did. But he says, too many people for Trump or against Trump have become emotionally unhinged about this. So it's become too much of like a inflammatory event. And he says that CNN was taking the president's bait by hiring a high-profile attorney to file this federal case. This is a negative. Trump is sitting around saying, this is great. So mm-hmm. Bob Woodward's saying basically, you know, you're playing right into his hands by doing this.
Exactly. How many times has he done that? And while everybody's concentrating on something that's important, he does something like this, and everybody turns their head away from it, and we forget about discussing what really happened.
The only thing I will say about it is that I think it has kind of galvanized the media in their front, because when all the media comes together like this and comes in support, I think that would be a good thing you can take from it.
Well, it's like I say, if the things were being done without ulterior motives, for one of my people that I used to like, and it's hard for me to watch him anymore, is Chuck Todd, that does Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm.
He gets this glimmer in his eye when he can say something that runs Trump down. And you can tell which side of the fence he comes from, and he's looking for negatives to go in there. He could hardly keep himself together on election night. When Trump won in 2016, he couldn't believe it. He was melting down there on TV because he could not believe this was just appalling to him.
Yeah.
And I understand it. You're allowed to have your own feelings. But if you're the media, you have to maintain an unbiased front if you're going to do reporting. Otherwise, this is what happens, is you get set up as everybody's against me. They're all wanting this, and they're all doing that. And that's how these things happen. But it didn't used to be that way. It used to be, I didn't think of the media as being liberal or conservative. It was just the media.
Yeah.
And now we have definite fields of where it is, and we've gone into fake news. It used to be the truth was the truth. Now we don't know what the truth is. One side says this is the truth. The other side says this is the truth. And so you got 50% of the people believe in one and 50% of the other, and that's why we're in the damn shape we're in.
It's true, but I do think that by him doing this, at least all the news sources are all sticking together and saying, we all agree this is not right. There's nothing fake about that. This is true.
Well, that's true, and from a strictly First Amendment standpoint, and if you're in the media, which the First Amendment is the biggest friend you've got, then I think whichever side you're on, you do have to stand behind that.
Yeah. Well, so procedurally, where are we with this lawsuit? Now, I want to get into that a little bit, too. So basically, as I said, there's been a complaint filed, and all the defendants, I assume, have been served. Some process server walked up to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, knocked on the door. Knock, knock, knock.
Is John Doe here?
Yeah.
John Doe, Secret Service guy?
where are they serving John Doe, Secret Service guy? They were going to serve him at
Arby's.
Address unknown.
So, send it to the North Pole.
Yeah, they'll publish.
Get there with Santa's letters.
They'll publish for them. So basically, they'll serve them, and they'll have time to file some sort of answer or responsive pleading. Whenever there's a complaint filed, basically you have to file an answer where you answer each of the different allegations which are stated in the complaint. So, for example, if you look at this complaint, it says, you know, for first paragraph, plaintiff Jim Acosta is a journalist and has been a journalist for more than two decades, blah, blah, blah. So if you're going to answer that as a defendant, you would say, defendant is without knowledge to all this. You know, I don't know if he's been a journalist for two decades. Who knows?
And you say there's a lot of people been whatever for two decades and they still suck at their job.
Yeah.
That means nothing. So next.
So basically, but for example, if you were Donald Trump answering this, and paragraph 9 says, defendant Donald J. Trump is president of the United States. He is sued in his official capacity. You might say, agree. You know, I am the president. I am being sued in my official capacity. So you don't necessarily disagree with everything in the complaint. You right. actually agree to certain things in there. So, mm-hmm. But honestly, they probably won't even file an answer in this case. Mostly what will happen, and this is my best bet, is there's going to be some sort of motion to dismiss filed by the defendants in this case.
I think they already have.
Oh, have they?
Yeah. I don't know that it's been ruled on, but I think they've already filed to have it gotten rid of.
Yeah, so basically you would file a motion to dismiss saying that basically that they're based on pure legal arguments that you can't maintain this cause of action or it's not right to do. They're actually, and we'll do a bit of legal trivia here, there used to be something called a demurrer, and a demurrer is basically a legal equivalent of saying, like, so what? So you basically say, yeah, everything in there is true, but you know what? So what? Doesn't mean anything. Mm. And that was called a demurrer. Mm. But they actually got rid of that. It was replaced by Federal Rules of Civil Procedure.
So what?
Yeah, by Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12b-6. And instead of a demurrer, now we have what's called a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So this is a little bit of legal trivia there.
We had something on the railroad called demurrage.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
That's when a customer kept their car beyond the number of days they were allowed to unload it. You only had so many days, according to tariff, to unload your car. And if you didn't turn it back over to the railroad by then, you started paying a daily rate on it. And that was called demurrage.
But you guys never collected it. You just said, nah, so what?
No, we collected it. We collected every penny. We like sending out bills on the railroad.
The interesting thing about the 12b-6 motions or 12b-6 claims is that you actually have to use them immediately when you're with your first responsive pleading. Otherwise, you can waive them, and that will preclude you from ever trying to raise that argument again. So you want to make sure you use your 12b-6 motions immediately.
Use those 12b-6 motions right away, boys and girls. Don't save them for later.
Here's another interesting trivia thing. The one thing that you cannot waive ever is subject matter jurisdiction.
I wouldn't try to do that.
Yeah, don't. You can't do it.
What is subject matter jurisdiction?
What is it?
Yeah.
We already talked about it once. You should know what it is.
Well, I don't remember. Did we talk about it today or was it another day?
It's basically the authority of a court to hear cases of a particular type of case relating to a specific subject matter.
Oh, okay.
So an example is a bankruptcy court can only has the authority to hear bankruptcy cases.
We talked about that in the jurisdiction episode, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but you can't. That's always an issue. So. Yeah, so that's where we are with regards to the procedure, you know, and what do I think is going to happen with this? I imagine, well, I don't know. I would normally say it'll probably get worked out, but who knows?
Well, I mean, if they give him his credential back, does that mean that your lawsuit is baseless then? Because once he has it, then what difference does it make?
Well.
Unless you're saying so that he can't ever do it again.
So the interesting thing about the lawsuit is that at the very end, and you'll see this in a lot of lawsuits, it has what's called a prayer for relief. And this is basically what the...
Hail Mary, huh?
Hail Mary, what they want. So here's what CNN wants. Immediate restoration of Acosta's press credentials and hard pass so that plaintiffs may continue to report from the White House briefings and perform their jobs on White House grounds and at other presidential events. In the alternative, immediate restorations of Acosta's press credentials pending due process, including but not limited to a formal written explanation as to why the press why the pass is being revoked, an opportunity for plaintiffs to respond to the allegations and be heard before a neutral arbiter, and a final written decision. A declaration that the revocation of Acosta's press credentials was unconstitutional in violation of the First Amendment and the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment. A declaration of the revocation of Acosta's press credentials violated the Administrative Procedures Act, 5 U.S.C. 706-2, and an order granting plaintiffs costs, fees, and disbursements incurred in connection with these proceedings. So basically, they're saying we either want his press pass back, or we want a written reason and a hearing as to why it was taken back.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and also we want a declaration that basically what you did was wrong.
Well, here's what I would ask. Is there any precedent for due process concerning something like this? Has it ever been done before?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the case you were just talking about,
That was, they filed a lawsuit and it went to the lawsuit, but they never had a due process hearing on whether it was proper or not. I mean, I would assume that would be something in school, say, where you are suspended and then they have a hearing with your parents involved and stuff like that and decide whether it was really justified or not.
Well, I think at this point, though, that there's no actual explanation as to why his press credentials were taken.
He was rude.
No, but there's no formal explanation.
Well, that's what Trump said. He was rude.
Yeah, but that doesn't cut it.
And he said, take his credential.
And that's not due process.
No, it's not due process. I'm just saying, is there anything that outlines that due process must take place for this? Because there's sometimes it doesn't. Just like, you know, Draymond Green just got suspended by the Warriors there for a few games because he got in a dust-up with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, you don't get a dust-up with the real star.
Yeah, so they said, you're suspended for several games. They didn't have due process, and they didn't hold a hearing. They just said, Durant's more important to us, so we're going to suspend this guy. And he's got no appeal because they own it. They own the team. They can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just think that a lot of this is just getting blown out of proportion, and it's, you know, that it shouldn't, these types of stories shouldn't dominate our headlines when there's so many other things that are screwed up that are going on that need to be attention paid to them.
Well, we're guilty by having this podcast about it. We're promulgating the problem.
Whoa, we're just trying to sort it out for people so they can move on to the next one. And, you know, this isn't the first person from CNN that the White House has banned. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Here's an event back in July of this year where reporter Caitlin Collins asked President Donald Trump about Vladimir Putin and Michael Cohen during a short meeting between Trump and Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the European Commission. Collins was serving as the pool reporter, meaning she was representing all the TV networks at the time. Trump did not answer her questions, but afterward, Collins said she was called into the office of Bill Shein, the new communications chief at the White House. Once there, Shein and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, informed her she would not be allowed to attend an open press event scheduled for later that afternoon because they thought her question was inappropriate for that venue. Collins said she replied, "You're banning me from an event because you didn't like the questions I asked?" That was evidently correct. So CNN, in a statement, called the decision retaliatory in nature and not indicative of an open and free press, adding, "We demand better." TV networks, including Fox News, also issued statements in support of Collins.
Yeah.
So they issued support for her. Fox News did then, too, with the same type thing. So, and it just says the White House had a long, contentious relationship with CNN, labeling them as fake news.
Yeah, he doesn't like CNN.
Here's what I want to know. I think that she's got a Title VII complaint. They didn't file a lawsuit for her. They filed one for Jim Acosta. Was she not as important because she's a woman and she got banned? I think she should turn around and file a lawsuit against CNN for not having her back.
Maybe she should. I don't know.
No due process. Are you willing to take her case?
Nope.
No. You don't have jurisdiction, huh?
I could actually be admitted to Washington. I can wave in.
Maybe it's because it happened in another country.
Was it in another country?
I think so. I think that's where they were at this event in Europe somewhere.
If I was going to sue CNN, then I'd probably have to sue them in Georgia. So I'd probably have to be admitted pro hoc vice.
Georgia, Russia?
Yeah. No. Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. I thought you meant, you know, like back in the USSR.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Breeze.
So Legal Breeze is a part of the show where we ask different legal questions about different things we talked about. Usually it's me asking Tommy if he remembers a term I just said. Now, this was not actually...
A termite?
This is actually not a term I had planned on asking you about Legal Breeze, but since you asked me about filing a lawsuit on behalf of the female CNN reporter, I threw this term out there, and you didn't ask me what it meant, so it's fair game.
Oh, no.
I said pro hoc vice.
Pro hoc vice?
Yeah.
That means for free.
No.
That's ad hoc.
I said basically if I wanted
pro bono.
I wanted to file a lawsuit in Atlanta, I'd have to be admitted pro hoc vice. And that's where you can file to be admitted on a case-by-case basis in a certain state.
Uh-huh.
And it's called pro hoc vice.
Pro hoc vice.
V-I-C-E, like vice, but it's pronounced vice.
Hmm. Pro hoc vice would probably be more correct.
What is an amicus brief?
That's when you're filing a friendly brief. You really don't have a dog in a fight, but you want to say, you know what? We think this feller's right, and we want to say, you need to listen to him.
I'm glad to use my exact word. You don't have a dog in the fight. Did you pick that from me, or is that just your vernacular as well?
That was just the best way to sum it up.
I think it is. I agree. It's a good West Virginia way to sum it up. Now, I don't have a dog in this fight, but let me tell you what my two cents are.
Here's what I reckon. You fellers ought to make up and play nice.
What is a demur?
A demur is so what?
Exactly.
It's like, okay, you asked for it, so what? We don't care.
Yeah.
But you can't do a demur anymore because now there's a 12 BC.
12 BC? It's 12 B6.
Oh, 12 B6.
Yeah.
I thought it was before Christ.
Yeah. No, this would be AD.
Oh, AD. After
yeah.
Donald.
Yeah, after Donald. We don't know what comes after Donald. Who knows?
You're not watching American Horror Story? Mm-mm. Then you'd know what happens after that.
Oh, is it a post?
It's the apocalypse.
Oh. You think President Trump's going to bring on the apocalypse?
Yeah. A little 666 behind his ear.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know.
No, I don't think that.
And the last one is subject matter jurisdiction.
Subject matter jurisdiction means that the subject matter to which you have filed this case is applicable to the court you have filed it into.
And when is it too late to contest subject matter jurisdiction?
You got to do it right away.
What?
You got to do it right away.
Subject matter jurisdiction?
Oh, proper to contest?
Yeah.
When you don't think that you're in the right room.
Timing-wise, then when do you have to do it?
Right away.
No! You can always attack subject matter jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction is the one basically that you're in the wrong court. Like, for example, if you're not in a bankruptcy, not doing a bankruptcy, but you're in bankruptcy court, the court can't hear this. So you can always contest that.
Well, shouldn't you have that figured out before you go in?
You should.
I mean,
sometimes it takes time for that to develop.
I mean, if you're sitting there and they say, "Welcome to bankruptcy court," and you say, "Well, I'm here trying to get my hard pass back." Well, wouldn't you say, "I don't think this is right. I don't think I have a dog in this court."
What about this? If you have a case and the controversy, you don't know exactly how much is in dispute because you just don't know. You can't ascertain it. And then during the process of discovery, you find out that the, say the jurisdictional limits of the court is $15,000. Mm-hmm. But during the course of discovery, you find out that basically, well, it's really only $5,000 that's in dispute right now. Mm-hmm. So actually that $5,000 falls below the jurisdictional limits of that court. So technically it wouldn't have subject matter jurisdiction to hear it. So
you got to go to small claims court now, huh?
You could, yeah. But I mean, the court might go ahead and hear it anyway, depending on where you are, but That's just kind of a broad example. So have about how it might develop later on that you might be able to attack that not immediately. So.
Well, all right then.
Yeah.
So there you go. So was the reporter in the wrong? Was Trump in the wrong? Well, who knows? Maybe the lawsuit will decide.
I'm going to have to tell you, I'm not going to answer that. I'm going to take a hard pass.
You're going to take a hard pass? Take a left turn?
Take a left turn at Albuquerque. And a hard pass.
That sounds like Bugs Bunny's direction. I took a wrong turn at Albuquerque.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.